Hello now. Welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm with you here in Berea. OTA number 5 wrapping up for the Browns on the practice field right now. Mike Dreamer on our board today, and we've got a lot to talk about, a lot to hear from as well. Browns defensive coordinator Ray Horton will be with us in studio sometime between 1:30 and 2 o'clock, we're told. We will also hear from Browns associate head coach on offense, Pep Hamilton, at 2:30. We could go to the podium. Joe Thomas will be speaking today. A lot of players will be speaking today, so we're going to get as much of that to you as we can here live on Cleveland Browns Daily. But let's start with this, Matt. Today you and I had the opportunity to be out there at practice. What are your top takeaways from that OTA session you saw out there today?
Well, the first one, my first main takeaway in watching the offense is someone needs to emerge as a number one wide receiver. No matter the quarterback, just to stay, you know, very unbiased. No quarterback could connect, you know, time and time again with any one guy. The ball was being spread around, which is good. And I think Hugh Jackson's offense has the ability to do that and not really focus on one guy. But we saw what A.J. Green could do because of the talent that he was.
Sure.
In Cincinnati and how he got his steady dose of targets. And then the other guys became accent pieces. Well, right now, as I see it personally, is we have accent pieces because no one has emerged as a number one. And that's part of the learning process. That's part of the growing process for these rookies, which make up the majority of this wide receiver room. And I just want to see a guy, you know, a la Megatron, Larry Fitzgerald. Everyone knows if it's third and six plus where the football is going to go, that you're going to go to that guy. And I think Gary Barnidge became that for us last year. He's now going to have a big bullseye on him, so someone else has to be that number one. And I think at this point, we have many candidates for the number two. But who's that number one?
And I think we'll find, hopefully, as it goes through, you want Corey Coleman to be able to assume that role.
I'm not saying he can't be. Nobody.
Right.
I'm not saying nobody can be that guy. I'm saying when I watch practice right now, nobody is that guy.
And there's still, you know, we know Al Saunders has told us that once they figure out who the top guys are, they're going to start to get all the first team reps. And you can still see right now it's a rotation as they're trying to figure out exactly who those guys are. Before we do our top three takeaways, that's your number one. My number one is going to be, and you can put me in my place, obviously, from a defensive point of view. But it looks like the Browns are going to have the ability to run the football. At least we saw some big runs today where there were big holes for Isaiah Crowell, who looks incredibly explosive, and Duke Johnson, who had some nice moves out there. But you did see some progress in the running game, and now, again, no pads are on. So what can you really tell from that other than the fact that Crowell looks lean and very explosive?
To me, I think if you understand the Ray Horton defense, and that's another one of my takeaways, is it looks like a defense that I've played in before. So I have a heavy recollection of some of the concepts that he's running. And what it says to me of why they've been able to essentially block up these runs and get some chunk runs is they're getting bodies on a body. You know, there's no confusion about setting the front, about, you know, Cam Irving making the calls. What blitz or fire zone are they bringing that they just... They take their track, they communicate it well, and they execute their job. Otherwise, that guy doesn't squirt through the way they did multiple times today, very clear.
Yeah, and you saw, and would you say to your eye, do you see something that looks a little bit better from an Isaiah Crowell from a year ago, the burst he showed?
I do. I like the burst. I think that, you know, Hugh Jackson is not going to run the football with Isaiah Crowell just to run the football. You know, the intent when he is in the game is to run it a certain way, and that's power behind his pads. They're not going to ask him to do things he's not comfortable doing. And that may limit the offense in some cases when Crow's in the game.
Sure.
But to that same point, Duke Johnson, when he's in the game, there'll be a series of run plays that they like with Duke in the game. You know, as we said, to get that 150, 180 carries on the ground. And then we also know what he brings to the table when he's in the game through out of the backfield. You know, lining up all over the place, getting that mismatch. So it's very interesting, and I enjoy watching practice, and I think you have to, and we're learning, and I think the media, as it was open today, is learning that we are okay at the running back position with a healthy Isaiah Crowell and an explosive, you know, Duke Johnson on the ground.
Had that nice jump cut, shades of Shady McCoy out there, which was good to see. All right, your number two takeaway from OTAs today.
My number two takeaway was the defense and where they're at. Just standing over there watching the individual drills, and to see, I actually had an opportunity to stop on my way out and watch the D-line hit the sled. I watched the linebackers and what they're teaching them, and it's drills that I did. And I'm not trying to say, linebacker drills are linebacker drills, but I like what they're using, and what they're doing is they're properly going through the steps. Is what they're doing, working on individually, they then work on in group when it's just offense and defense on two separate fields, and then they bring it together. And that's how you fit the pieces of the puzzle together to have the high quality 11-on-11 competitive sessions where you can execute what you worked on an individual and not have to taper some of that back. But listening to some of the calls, recognizing some of them and some not, because it's exclusive to Ray Horton and the Cleveland Browns. But and then watching the guys go out there and execute it, the communication and the chatter on defense, by DeMario Davis getting the front lined up, yep, shifting the front, because they were working on some different formations, the communication on the back end by Ibrahim Campbell and Jordan Poyer. I like it, and it was good to be out there and see it.
My number two takeaway is that Justin Gilbert has gone from lost rookie who had unbelievable athletic ability to, I'll call, shunned sophomore, which he was last year, where he never seemed to be welcome or engaged or anything positive, to a guy who's working with the first team and has gone from someone who would stand out when you'd watch the tape of practice or be at practice for negative reasons a few times of practice, to a guy who looks very, very comfortable out there and very much looks like a veteran cornerback who's finally comfortable in his own skin. Made a nice play on Barnage in the end zone, yeah, on that back shoulder fade they tried to throw there. He just looks comfortable. And in some ways, has he gone out there and made, at least, again, we only get to see one practice a week, but has he made that unbelievable interception? No. But what he's not doing is standing out for the bad plays. It's almost like you forget he's out there. And I think for Justin, right, Gilbert, that's a very good thing and a very different thing, and I'm very encouraged by what I've seen from him.
Yeah, I agree. I really have too.
I really hope that it can continue and translate, because that would be a huge, huge boon to this team. And speaking about the defensive backs, the other thing I would say is, you're seeing Kaywan Williams looks to be in top shape, and Jamar Taylor is a physical corner who they've been using in the nickel, and that's the word, I know it's hard to use without pads, but he just has a physical presence on him. Breaks quickly on the ball and looks like a guy that could be a player for this team, certainly a competitor at that cornerback spot.
Absolutely. I mean, we talked about the 14 guys in the class, but that trade is something that gets overlooked, and he's getting reps, and he's proving his value for Sashi Brown making the decision.
All right, your third and final takeaway from OTA today.
My third and final takeaway, and I had the opportunity to just, share this thought with, a few of the beat writers who are out there, is I love the tempo of practice. I love the competitive nature of practice. And I love the chatter between sides, meaning the defense doesn't want to get, give up a run. But when the offense gets a run, the offense will let that defense know. Then the, sure, defense wants to come back. And there's just, it's fun, as we've heard from everybody, Kirksey and Krueger and the guys, Joe Hayden in his comments, his presser last week. This is what it's supposed to be like. This is what it's supposed to feel like. That's the way you're supposed to practice. You're supposed to enjoy your job. It's not supposed to feel like work, because you, in fact, play a game for a living. And I think that guys are seeing this for the first time. And you can see the energy. I can feel the energy. And I love the competitive nature, the chatter back and forth, the communication between both sides. In walking away, coming into lunch, coming up here to the studio, I just said, that's what practice should feel like.
Yeah, I like the banter between each other, and then when the refs would throw a flag here or there, there was a lot of banter with the referees, and yes, it is competitive, it is up-tempo. My final takeaway was that RG3, to me today, appeared good and decisive with the football. He made quick decisions from the pocket. There were we saw a lot of blitz concepts coming at him today, and made the right read on a couple of them. One, yep, for a slant to Terrell Pryor, which turned into a big gain. Another on where he kind of hit Duke Johnson out of the backfield on a play that looked like it was going to pick up about 10 yards. I thought you know, I think that's going to be his biggest challenge. When the pads are on and he's being hit, can he stay in the pocket and make those quick decisions? We know what he can do when he gets out of the pocket. I also liked, and I know it's only training camp or only OTAs, but the one play where he got out of the pocket and bought a little time and there was really nothing there, instead of trying to force something, he threw it away. And he really threw the ball away, but he threw it away, which is good. Throw it away or slide, live to play another down. And I thought that was encouraging there. And Josh McCown, for a man close to my age, showed some nice athleticism on a read option where he juked Mingo out of his shoes.
Yeah. And you know what? Even furthermore, and this, I guess this could be my fourth takeaway, is going back to the offense, is I love the levels that Hugh Jackson is integrating into his offense. There's the one play, then I've got the two off of it. And then even, you know, because they're now, as you said, the fifth OTA, they're now able to add that third wrinkle. You know, it's, for example, the zone read. He's going to give it, you know, or RG3 is going to keep it. That's the one and the two. But the three is they have the reverse off of it that you can do as well. And the four off of it is the bubble screen, you know, off it as well. Well, he pulls the ball, carries out the fake, throws it out to the wide receiver. So there's levels to this offense. And I think, as you can see, you know, some of the young guys need to be lined up properly, you know, which Hugh will halt or Ray will halt, you know, if they're lined up wrong or have the wrong communication. And it's an opportunity to pause, teach, and then execute it, you know, full bore. But I love what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you're right. There are some of those, what they call those, the RPO, the package plays, where it's the, he's got the first one is the fake between he and the running back. You have the guy coming around for the reverse that can turn into that screen to the side. You've got the backside wide receiver doing his thing. So there were some interesting concepts. And the way that Hugh likes to move his offensive linemen around in those as well, where he can put a tackle all the way out at wide receiver so that if you do throw, the guy coming on the reverse is that screen. He's got a lineman leading the way for him already pulled out. Or you've got the running back who can cut it inside. The quarterback can keep it. I really think that there are going to be some interesting concepts. And I was just saying, you know, back to the running game. If this team can run the football and hit some chunk plays running the ball, or just enough to keep defenses honest.
Yeah.
RG3 was still very good when he had a good running game.
Yes.
When he can utilize that play action and they can run the football and some of the read option stuff. But some of it's just was straight running. It wasn't necessarily all read option today, which I thought was good to see. There's very much a traditional offense, but also very much a progressive offense, and that you're doing some of the things that we saw, you know, in Cincinnati last year. You're doing some of the things you saw with Chip Kelly when he had the quarterback, LeSean McCoy, DeShaun Jackson, that they're trying to utilize with Corey Coleman today. So there's a lot to this offense. And I think overall, though, this defense, despite all the mass exodus of people there and the youth on that defense, looks pretty comfortable early on in this scheme.
It does. And that's why, as I said earlier, just the communication and the execution is I think Ray Horton should be happy. And, you know, we'll hear from Ray, you know, later in the show here in the Dog Bowl. And we'll ask him that, you know, are you happy with where you're at? You know, because, as I said, Hugh, speaking of from an offensive standpoint, has a landmark of where he wants to be from a content standpoint. Okay, how much of my playbook am I in? How much am I giving these guys? Are they chewing it up and spitting it back out on the practice field the way I want it? So he has to taper some things back and push forward. And I think the same can be said for Ray. And I like what I'm seeing. And I love the philosophy, because it goes back to, you know, 3-4 defenses that I've been a part of. And I to my eyes, they're executing.
Yeah, which is good to see. And they look like
they
know what they're supposed to do.
They're playing fast because they know what to do. Yes. They're playing fast. And when you play fast, I guarantee you that Ray Horton would take 11 guys that play with their hair on fire than 11 studs making a lot of money thinking they can go one-on-one and win.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. All right. Lots going on in Berea. We are going to have Ray Horton in studio today. We're going to hear from Brown Associate Head Coach of Offense, Pep Hamilton, in the second hour as well. We can talk Cavs. We will talk about, obviously, you can react to our OTA takeaways. What do you want to see? Again, I thought it was another solid day for Terrell Pryor as well, who made several catches in the team drills. And there's, you know what's different about him, just before we go to break here? There's a swagger to Terrell Pryor as a wide receiver now that was not there last year.
Agreed.
He was talking a little smack to DB, saying on one where he didn't get the ball, that was a touchdown, let him know. He looks You almost forget it's Terrell Pryor. He looks like a big, fast, physical wide receiver, which is nice to see for the Cleveland Browns. Again, no pads on. It is early. We're not going crazy here with it, but just something to keep an eye on. 216-578-0850, Zagura and Wilhelm on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Coming up, the defensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns, Ray Horton, will be with us in studio here today. 216-578-0850, that's the number to get with us. And by the way, we got to give a shout-out to our listener, the Dent Master, coming through with some unbelievable stuff. It's a box here. Our guy John Anderson is the Dent Master. You can follow him on Twitter at Dent Master. If you're down in Atlanta and you have a dent, I imagine he is the master. He sent us some unbelievable beef jerky from Stripling's General Store. This looks like the real deal right here.
Moultrie, Georgia.
Moultrie, Georgia. You know that's got to be legit. So he sent us a couple original, and he said, the hot is hot, Matt Wilhelm.
Not for me.
Yeah,
you can eat the hot with your jalapeno margarita tonight watching the Cavs.
Oh, I'm going. No, you better believe I'll be at Barrio having a jalapeno margarita.
You go to the game?
Oh, I'm going tonight.
That's not a clincher.
It's a big game, though. It's kind of a big game.
It's not a clincher.
No, but I haven't gone yet.
Okay.
I'm going. I'm going tonight. Me and the kid, Andrew Sims, Esquire, agent to the Stars, will be down there. Yeah, I can't wait to get into Barrio. But I'm excited for that hot. The hotter, the better.
Not for me, man.
That's all right.
Makes my nose run and I start to sweat.
My allergies are your allergies bad?
No, I don't have allergies to anything.
Oh my God. First of all, that's another reason I hate cats. I'm very allergic to cats. But number two, my allergies here, horrific.
My wife's allergic to cats. She hates it. She can the second she walks in an
doorway. I know. Yeah.
She knows. She walks in, she'll just go, "You have a cat."
Yeah, I know. And like my throat gets terrible. Absolutely terrible. Anyway, 216-578-0850. We're going to hear from Chris Tabor tomorrow. I think that is going to be, he's always fun, always a good talker, interesting. One of the things he said is that Corey Coleman is a candidate to return punts and kicks for this team. Said it wouldn't hinder his development as a wide receiver at all, according to Pep Hamilton. We'll hear from him on that later. And points to Antonio Brown as one. As a fan, would you prefer Coleman to just focus on wide receiver?
I can't imagine that. Yes, you absolutely do. But this is a guy with a unique skill set. I think anyone drafted in the first round has a unique skill set, okay? And it is extremely, extremely talented. And I don't necessarily believe that a punt returning... let me put it in perspective. What Corey Coleman would be doing if he were not participating in as a punt returner? Probably standing on the sideline watching other guys field footballs. Or potentially maybe walking through routes. He's not practicing. So it's not truly taking time away from
No, when they're doing
receiving.
Special teams, they're not doing receiver
Special
drills.
Team, special teams. He's going to learn, as a rookie, he's going to learn another. Maybe he's running down as a gunner. Would you have Corey Coleman running down as a gunner? Or would you rather have him with the ball in his hands?
I want the ball in his hands. And I'll say two things so far. Number one, he is our most explosive player. He's supposed to be. I mean, that's what it showed in college. So I want the ball in his hands as often as possible. And as a receiver, you know, let's say you have a very good game as a receiver. You're catching the ball six times is a very good game for a wide receiver. So this is an extra way to get the ball in his hands two or three more times a game and see if he can make a big play for you. Number two, you know, you can talk about Antonio Brown. DeSean Jackson came in the league right away and was a wide receiver and a punt returner and made
a
big impact.
You almost do that first.
Yeah.
And didn't we talk, was it last year? Wanting to get Justin Gilbert on the field as a kick returner, punt returner, something, because you wanted to get a payoff for the investment on making him the first-round pick that he was.
Absolutely, and he could go ahead and flip the switch. By the way, the Dent Master wants us to know that Cam Irving is from Moultrie, Georgia.
I remember,
he said that when we were talking to him. I wonder if he knows about Striplings. Maybe we'll save one for Cam Irving for when
there
he comes in here.
Not the hot.
A little piece of home. No, he's not going to get the hot. I'm going to take that hot. You better forget it. The Manimal asks us, which rookies have stood out to you so far?
I would say, not because he's your guy, but I'd say Hollywood Higgins makes catches every day.
Yep.
You know, that make you go, he can play in this league. He's the really one that stood out so far. I think, Scooby, limited opportunity to show. I think Schobert blends in. I don't even know when he's in the game and when he's not.
Yeah.
You know, and so he's not getting a lot of reps because they're going ones, twos. Or they go ones, twos, one, two, three, you know, to get, you know, a few reps for these young guys. I mean, Coleman, I hate to say it, but I mean, he hasn't stand out to me. Hasn't practiced.
Oh, Corey.
Yeah, Corey Coleman. Okay. You know, hasn't stood out to me a whole bunch to go, wow, that was the play. That happened a little bit last week, not so much today.
Correct.
You know, while I was out of practice. Nassib's not practicing. Sean Coleman not practicing. So I can't say, you know, Lewis hasn't made a play in my eyes. Peyton's not here.
He's not here.
So, Drago, he's out there doing his job. If you're not talking about him, I guess
he's doing good. Right.
Sure.
Yeah. I would say Hollywood is stand out, and you're right. And he's shown where he looks very comfortable to me, and I know he's not getting hit right now, but if you watch his tape, the guy was fearless. Looks very comfortable on those inward breaking routes, catching the ball with his hands in traffic and accelerating out of that traffic. And he's a very good route runner.
Yeah, and I think Caldwell's running at the nickel with the twos, and Kindred had the pick today, you know, that happened to be. So he made a play.
And he looks like a very good athlete to me.
Yeah.
Derek Kindred.
Yeah, and I think
he passes your calf test.
He does.
Fantastic catch.
He does.
Speaking of the Cavs, the Cleveland Cavs tonight at home. Big game, Matt Wilhelm. Big game. And how about the Thunder?
Thunder.
Russ. People were making fun of me. Russ, I'm telling you, folks.
You picked him to lose yesterday. I did. I'm the only one that picked him to win.
I said I wouldn't be shocked, though, by the way. I wouldn't be shocked. Brian Vaughn says, will the country club training camp be a thing of the past? I want to see some passion added to this year. Yes. Emphatically, yes.
And here's how I can say that it will be different. The physicality and the intent that the defense in general has in rushing the passer without pads on will only be accelerated with pads. And if you're an offensive lineman, do you want to be the guy that gives up a sack? Do you want to be the guy that gets out physical at your own game? No. So the offense will then kind of step up and protect their quarterback so that he's not that we're hitting him in practice, but there's no pressure in practice so that we can actually look like an NFL offense.
How hard is it to evaluate the linemen at this stage, offensively and defensively? Because one guy that we didn't talk about is Emmanuel Ogbah, as somebody who stood out. From a physical standpoint, he stands out, but you can't actually get sacks right now. You can't actually hit the quarterback. You can't make those big tackles
for loss.
If he's
winning, if you were to focus, and I focused on it a few times today, when I was standing almost, you know, directly down the line of scrimmage, I questioned a few times. I'm like, oh, why is Danny off the ball so much? I'm like, oh, they're running a stunt. You know, it was Dez Bryant on a stunt with, you know, Shelton penetrating. So they're working on what they can right now without being flat out bull rushing. So the best way you can say or judge how an offensive or defensive lineman is doing up to this point is, are they winning their one-on-one? Who's winning their one-on-one? Because that's all it really is across the front, is a series of one-on-one blocks. Are you using what Joe Kim and that strength staff and the defensive lines are coaching with your hand placement, your hand, your rips, you know, your moves, and diversifying? If you're winning your one-on-one, you can say that the practices are a success.
And it will be interesting to see. I can't wait for the pads to come on. I want it to be training camp already because I want to see these guys play some football because it's exciting to see the energy. You're seeing some of the execution on both sides of the ball, but you want to see some real football be played. By the way, today at the podium, DeMario Davis will be there, Joe Thomas will be there, and Terrell Pryor. We'll hope to bring you as many of those as we can today. For those that we don't get live today, we'll play for them for you tomorrow and Friday. And I'll be curious to hear what Terrell Pryor has to say because he is carrying himself. When you think about what happened to him when we went to those joint practices in Rochester, and you think about the way that he's carrying himself right now, he is very much a changed player, and I would say in terms of where somebody was at this time a year ago to where they are today for someone who remains on the Browns roster, I'd say nobody has made a bigger leap than Terrell Pryor.
Maybe only Justin Gilbert.
Yeah, those would be the two.
Up to this point, especially in referencing Buffalo.
God, yeah, that was a rough trip for both of those guys. And it's early. It's tough to get excited, but at the same time, you're hopeful. You're a little bit optimistic, and I would like to see some good things out of both of those young players, certainly because when you look at Terrell Pryor, there's nobody else on the roster that looks like him from a physicality standpoint at the receiver position. And he stands out for just how big he is and how quick he is when he's running around. And then, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, for Gilbert at that cornerback position, I went out a little bit on a limb yesterday. I said, I think Justin Gilbert if he plays well, has a chance to be that opening day starter opposite Joe Haden, given kind of where this team is going. And it's going to be very, very interesting to see how that all ultimately does play out.
Really, but do.
Hopefully they make that a tough decision for everybody here. That's what you want, competition and guys performing at a high level. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will have defensive coordinator Ray Horton. Maybe not right away, but very soon thereafter. You have questions about OTAs. You have questions about the players. You have to comment on what you've heard so far. Call us up, 216-578-0850. Zagura Wilhelm, CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Very happy to be joined in studio right now by Browns defensive coordinator Ray Horton. Coach, welcome back to the Dog Bowl.
Oh, it's a pleasure to come back. And I keep telling people, it's the people. When we drive around and the people in the city, it's amazing. It's an amazing place.
Well, we're certainly happy to have you back. What are the big differences you see this time around from your first tenure with the Browns?
Well, hopefully the guys are more comfortable with me now, and I think they are, and the young guys are getting to know me. But what we want to do is win. I understand. You know, we understand what the Cleveland fan base is. We get former players coming in. I get it in the stores. They want a winner.
Yep.
They want a championship. And we're here to build that. We really are. We understand. We hear you.
And, Coach, how have the current Cleveland Browns and then the big group of rookies really grasped your philosophy? Because that is a change from the last regime that was here, the new philosophy and the new mentality of how they're going to play defense.
I don't think they know yet. You know, they're so busy trying to learn the playbook. I don't think they know what we want yet. They are a bunch of guys right now that are just eager to do whatever we want, which is outstanding. And I think the veteran players, they know what it takes, and they are our leaders now. They have taken advantage of, you know, this new system, new team coming in, new head coach coming in, kind of the same system, and they're leading the rookies around. They're saying, guys, we want to win. We want to win. And before, I don't know if I really heard the urgency in the guys, and now it's just about us. Let's go do this thing.
What has been a good surprise for you so far? Maybe a player, or maybe how they've done as a group early on here through five OTAs?
Well, I think as a coach, you want them to get it today. They don't have it yet, but the surprise is how they've worked hard to incorporate what we want and to do it. And there's the attendance has been outstanding, the attention to detail in the meetings. We test them weekly. That, to me, is... really, as a coach, I'm really pleased with the group of guys we have because, you know, sometimes you do have guys that you got to prod a little bit. Right now, all we're doing is just saying, hey, guys, this is what it takes to win. And I know you guys have talked to Coach Hugh, and if you listen to him talk, he's a different guy, meaning he's a motivational guy. He knows how to push the right buttons and how to talk. I love listening to Coach Hugh talk, and it's all about winning. I mean, that's all he talks about to the players, and the players get it. They know that we want to win here, and that's the only thing we're here for.
Something that I was able to grasp as a former defensive player that I thought was one of my key takeaways from being out of practice today was it seems like the defensive guys, your group, is executing, and they're communicating very well. And I know that's an evolving process day by day because you're throwing a lot at them simply because Hugh's going to throw a lot at them on the other side offensively.
No question. We are going to be so far ahead because of our offense. They give us unbalanced. They give us tackled outside and eligible and
empty.
Wow. Oh, boy. So one of his big saying is, after we get done practicing against each other, when you get into the game, it's going to be so simple. And it'll be like, let's go play some football. But our guys are really into it. Now, obviously, the schemes on both sides of the ball, they have to be sound to work. Otherwise, you're just getting a bunch of guys to follow you. And it's like, well, Coach, this doesn't work. Well, we know the scheme works. Coach Hugh has been very successful. This system's been very successful. So we're going to put the players in place, and they are busting their butt for us right now to be everything that we want them to be.
I've talked to a lot of the players on the defense, and to a man, they're all excited about this defense. They think that while it is complex, it's simpler for them to understand. They know what they're supposed to be doing, and they feel comfortable in their ability to execute it. From your standpoint, when you talk about your scheme, for those who aren't familiar with it, what are you trying to accomplish? What are the tenets of the Ray Horton defense?
today was a classic example of what we want this defense to be. You know, we had probably 63 plays in practice, and we blitzed some, and sometimes we dropped in coverage. And we had an opportunity. It's hard to tell because, you know, there's no refs out there blowing the whistle, but we had an opportunity to get a sack with a DB somewhere in there today.
Uh-huh.
But the last play of practice, we dropped Armonte Bryant, our defensive lineman, into pass coverage, and he knocked the ball down. He dropped his interception. And so really that's what the defense is. It's an opportunity. If you do your job right, little guys can go get sacks and big guys can get interceptions, and that is what we want.
Before we went on air, you were talking a little bit about the rule changes in the National mm-hmm. Football League, and I would imagine from a defensive standpoint, you feel most of them favor the offense and certainly the passing game, and it very much has become a passing league. How much of what you do and the success that you can have is predicated upon fooling the quarterback or at least making them think an extra beat post-snap and also pre-snap?
That's the key to it. Once the ball is snapped, you're not going to fool them. You've got to go do what you do, and if you're rolling the cover two, he's going to look at the safety and go, oh, too high, let me work outside. If you're going to be single high, he's going to say, oh, I'm going to work the comeback on the corner. And if you show too high, he may say, I want to check to a run. We want them to get it post-snap and say, oh, now is it a blitz? Is it not? Oh, too long. And that is really the whole thing. I mean, you see how much, and I think the fans out there can identify with Peyton Manning going Omaha, Omaha, and all his talk. Well, that's all he's doing. He's trying to get you to move, and he wants a pre-snap key. Well, sometimes we're going to stand all 11 guys up and move them around. Are we going to rush 8 guys? Well, maybe. Are we going to drop 8? Maybe. You got to figure out as we go. And that's the beauty of what we do. Is it mass confusion? We hope so. But on defense, we have to know what we're doing and execute at a high level. So the rules change, and you have to go along with the rules.
And Coach, the one thing we did share, you know, Hugh Jackson shared with us, is putting together a staff, adding you to the staff here in Cleveland. But your defensive staff, talk about it, talk about the teaching, and just highlight the guys for all those who know that, yes, Hugh Jackson's the head coach and you're the defensive coordinator. We got Pep Hamilton. But the guys that actually go out there and engage with these players and teach them the nuances of your defense.
When I introduced our coaches, what I talked about was the number of Pro Bowl players that they have coached. Some have coached Hall of Fame players. We have Super Bowl winners in there. When you get that kind, that's all players want. Players say, get me better. They don't care who you are, where you come from, get me better. And when you have a resume like that, Coach Robert Nunn coming from the Giants, who's been perennial four-down, you know, sack leaders, two-time Super Bowl winners. Louis Chofi has coached numerous Pro Bowl players in the defensive backfield. Ryan Slowick, his father was one of my coaches coming in. So, you know, we have a good mix of young and old. And we talked about Johnny Holland, one of our linebacker coaches, being in the Packer Hall of Fame, the Texas A&M Hall of Fame. I think he was a straight-A student. When you get a resume and a group of coaches like that, you know, because players really simply just say, get me better. I don't care who you are.
Right.
And when you have a background like that, it adds a little bit when you come in because they know he's coached great players.
There's a validity to it.
There is.
Yeah, a lot of credibility with that. And I've noticed from your first time here when it was much more of a veteran defense than it is this time mm-hmm. around, it seems like you're doing a lot of teaching out there. Is that something you really enjoy, especially when you have so many young players?
That's the fun part of what we do. It really is. And really, I want our players to be an extension of us, meaning smart, tough guys that are on the field, and that once you kind of let them go, they can run and be comfortable no matter what happens on the field. And that's really, I think, a reflection of me. Once they get on the field, hopefully they're smart, tough guys out there on the field.
You talked about being comfortable. And one person that I've watched over the last 3 years mm-hmm. who looks the most comfortable he has at any point wearing a Browns uniform is Justin Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
And what have you seen from him? It's not great not having mm-hmm. Joe Hayden out there, mm-hmm. but he's getting that opportunity with the first team and seems to be taking advantage an amateur eye like myself. What are you seeing from Justin Gilbert?
A willingness to change. And, he and I sat down and had a good talk about what his hopes and plans and goals were. And I said, good. I like those. And I think I can help you get there. And there's trust on both sides, and he's doing everything we ask, and he's a very talented young man that we're doing everything we can to help him attain his goals.
Coach, I'm a former linebacker, so I want to focus on these linebackers. There's obviously a plethora of outside mm-hmm. linebackers. You draft Emmanuel mm-hmm. Ogba. You've got DeMario Davis coming from mm-hmm. another great scheme in a 3-4 defense to come here and be that strong thumper inside. And then Christian Kirksey. Just highlight that group, and with my extent in a 3-4 defense, these are the guys that should be leading the team in sacks, these two outside guys, but they're also the guys that are going to bring a lot of the confusion you talked about.
Yeah, I was talking to DeMario Davis, and I asked him, I said, if I ran an, what we call an inside fire zone,
middle
inside
dog cross,
blitz,
sure.
And I said, if I ran that, how many sacks do you think you can get? If I ran it 5 times every game, he says, oh, coach, would you really? I say, if you can sack the quarterback, I'll run it. And that's the mentality of our guys, because at some point they're going to go, coach, send me. And they're getting comfortable with me that they know I will. If they call me or they ask me that, hey, coach, will you run me? Will you blitz me? They'll get it the next play. Our linebackers, I am really excited about our players. I think we got a good young rookie class that I think will surprise some people. And our veterans guys are outstanding leaders. And so we got a good mix of older guys that have been there, done that, and younger guys that I think with untapped potential that are just kind of wide-eyed. And I think Emmanuel has been outstanding in practice. I think Joe Schobert has been outstanding in practice. And it, when you get that kind of quality, you look at him, you go, oh, boy, oh, boy.
We're on to something.
So
this could be fun.
I am very excited. And, again, we've got to get to the preseason and play. The people up in Green Bay, you know, Mike McCarthy and his offense, I'm sure they're thinking, oh, boy, good, good. We're looking good up here. Everybody thinks they're looking
sure.
good. So we'll see. But I like the pieces that we have in place.
One of the things we were talking about was just kind of the safety position and how you view that position, because when you were here last time, T.J. Ward went mm-hmm. to the Pro Bowl, mm-hmm. who's more of a mm-hmm. quote-unquote box safety, if you will. Do you have mm-hmm. a preference with how you want those safeties to be?
You mentioned T.J. I sent him a congratulations, a welcome to the club, the Super Bowl championship club.
Nice.
And that's the thing we're talking about. You get a player like T.J. that comes in and ends up, you know, playing well, and getting a Super Bowl ring, and that's what we're talking about. And I used TJ in our one of our meetings about he was in this room with you guys, and you know what kind of player he is. Why not us?
Right.
And that's really what it's about, getting a group of guys together. And our safety position, you know, I don't want to put limits on one guy and say he is this or he is that. I want them to be position flexible where they can come down in the box or stay deep. That's ideal, but is one guy maybe better suited by nature of his stature? Maybe, you know, he may be a little bit bigger. But our guys, right now, what I want to do, I don't want to be unfair to anybody, say, oh, this guy is good and this guy is work in progress. I want to just say, hey, guys, we're working as one unit here, meaning offense, defense, and special teams, to get good. Now, how do we get good? We all get good. And whoever ends up being the starter, congratulations, you probably earned the job.
All right, Coach, I know you got to run to a meeting, so last question. What can the Dog Pound expect to see from this defense when they come out to training camp and start getting ready for the season?
What we want them to do is just be proud of us. Now, are we going to the first day be a finished product? Absolutely not. But we understand what they want, and I love being back. I feel you. I hear you. I understand you, and I'm excited to be back.
Coach, awesome. We're excited to have you back. Thank you very much for the time.
Appreciate
and,
the time,
excited
man.
Excited to see Thank the you. Defense continue its quest to domination and to winning here. We'll be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Coming to you, you are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm. Matt, you're a defensive guy. That was the head honcho on defense. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, my biggest takeaway was, you know, our 2-minute conversation off the air after his time. And I'm, as I said prior to hearing from Ray Horton, it's like, I see what I know from the time that I spent with Wade Phillips, you know, who's got now a Super Bowl ring and extreme credibility coaching in this league for 30-plus years. And then Dom Capers, a guy who's been both a head coach and a defense coordinator for a very long time, and his system. And just hearing Ray say, it's not rocket scientists or rocket scientists. You know, it's like you got the players, let them go do what they do best. And I think that's what this evaluation time is for, is figuring out who does what best so that way you can showcase that ability on the football field and not just have them do something to do it for you.
And I think that that is a key thing as well, because you're talking about a defensive system that it sounds like is going to be tailored to what guys do well, as opposed to this is what we're doing, and I don't care if you don't do it well. I don't care if you don't want to do it. You're doing it because this is what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think even furthermore, you know, hearing from Ray is, you're and it's, in some cases, you're either on the bus or you're off the bus. Because this system works. Okay? And I know that it's not like he's getting any pushback right now from these players or even, you know, the elder statesmen here in Cleveland. They're buying in because they believe in this system. They have no reason not to. But this is a proven system. I'm going to do what has worked for Pittsburgh Steelers Super Bowl teams and what I've done in Tennessee and what I did in Cleveland to take us from where we were to what I did in that one season. So buy in, let's go, and trust me. And I think that's a key word. I think that's from the top down. We have to trust in what Sashi's doing in acquiring players. We have to trust in what Hugh's doing to have these players ready to play with the right mentality, develop the right culture, that physical nature of running the football, and allow that to trickle into what we do in the passing game with his creativity. The same can be said defensively. Line up and run the football, and when you can't, Ray Horton's job gets very easy.
Right, because then he can dial up all his exotic blitzes and try to confuse. And I think that it is amazing how much of a mental game the NFL is becoming because of some of the rule changes, where it really is about being able to deceive the quarterback. And as he talked about with you off air, and it was what you alluded to yesterday when I directly asked you the question, is why not just be a 4-3? It's because when he is a 3-4, he's got the ability to rush both outside guys, both inside guys, both guys on the right, both guys on the left. He can go with the outside guy on the right and the inside guy on the left. What's that, the saw?
Yeah, saw.
Saw one.
Sam and Will.
Yeah, Sam and Will. So
coming off the edge.
He's got so
and
many
then you,
options.
You integrate safeties. Safeties will come down and run support. No, safeties blitzing, either down the middle or off the edge too. You know, let's have you do all your prep work, watch the film that you need to understand that essentially everyone, maybe the corners might come 10 times a year. Okay.
The outside corners.
The outside corners might come 10 times a year. Okay, so discount those two. All other nine guys can come at any given time. Let's have you go account for that.
Yeah.
And when you get really good at disguising and holding and, you know, one guy showing that push and pull and bring it from the weak side, that's when it gets really fun. The players will love it. The production of these players will be up because the scheme's working.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, the talent is there. I like that he tell you was excited about some of the rookies. And I also like what he had to say about Justin Gilbert, where Justin Gilbert, he sat him down and said, what are your goals? Like, what do you actually want out of your time in the National Football League?
And I bet you as a player, and I have no knowledge of it, but the fact that Justin Gilbert felt like probably since he was drafted and actually put on a helmet, this is the first time he probably might have felt like someone actually cared about him as a player. And that in some cases is all you need to do is you're bought into me. Now I'm bought into you. Now I'm going to go practice.
And I think there was something about what happened. Justin Gilbert suffered a family tragedy in the offseason, and Ray Horton was talking about it downstairs before he came up with us. And that when Justin came back, everybody lit up and really embraced him. And I think for the first time, I feel like last year, and I said that, I called it, you know, from my take on it without really intimate knowledge about it, I called it the shun sophomore year for Justin Gilbert, and I think he feels involved. All right, we're going to head to the podium right now for a live presser.
Mm-hmm. You, or is this a continuation?
No, actually, this is the third year where I've been practicing every other day, going back through OTAs, and it may just be because Wednesday is usually the day off this year because I go Tuesday off Wednesday on Thursday, and maybe you guys were at practice on a different day last year. I don't remember.
Just part of the routine you're in now?
Yep, there's only so many sand grains left in my hourglass, and we don't want to tip the hourglass over here in the spring. We want to save some of those sand grains for Sundays in the fall.
We've asked this several times when a new head coach comes along. So what do you see differently about Hugh Jackson than the other half dozen or so? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there's an excitement with Hugh in the building right now. I think a lot of the guys really are kind of drawn to his attitude, kind of how he approaches meetings, how he approaches practice. Offensively speaking, it's great having a offensive head coach because he's actually the one running the offense. He's in there right behind the huddle after every play, barking things, barking orders, correcting guys, getting things lined up exactly the way he wants. And from an offensive player standpoint, I like that because the head coach is the one that kind of dictates how the team is run, and be able to have him in the offensive huddle saying exactly what he wants in every play, I think that's a big advantage. And people want to say defense wins championships, but I think maybe that was a quote from the 90s, because in today's football, you're going to win with offense. You got to score points to win. You can't expect to win games 7-10 all season long.
Joe, what do you say? I mean, there's been a theory espoused that as the veteran leader, guy's been around, you should be out there fighting through no matter what. What do you say to that?
Who said that? So I can talk to him? No, I think when you get to my age, my advanced age, you got to be smart about it. I mean, like I said earlier, I'd be happy to fight through things now if I knew I would still be able to do it in the fall on Sundays. But unfortunately, I'm at a point in my career where if I go out there every day right now, the wheels will fall off before the season starts. And then I think they pay me to play on Sundays.
Rookie, did you ever think, man, I was going to get time when I need this time off because I'm getting old?
Mm-hmm. I never thought too far in advance when I was a younger player. I was always just worried about finishing the day. But even going back to my first couple years, you see it happens with veterans. I mean, this is – it's not college football anymore. These guys are – 30-year-old men, and in some cases like myself, and it's a young man's game. And so when you get older, you got to do everything you can to try to get yourself ready to play on Sundays and do your best. And sometimes that means you do have to back off a little bit.
Brian Hartline was the latest veteran who was terminated here. Do you believe there's a fine line between a youth movement and overdoing it?
Well, there's a science to everything you do, and every team and every organization is going to have their own way of thinking. And the people that are running this team obviously think they haven't gone too far, or they wouldn't have done it. So their line of thinking is, hey, let's bring in these younger players. They're going to be more valuable to help us kind of build for what we want to get to down the line. And that's their opinion.
Joe, at least watching the first couple of practices, it looks quicker. The pace of the practice looks quicker. How does it feel for the players? Is it as noticeable to you guys as at least it looks to us?
Well, I think what we're seeing right now is a lot more no huddle, calling the plays on the line of scrimmage. And so I think that is probably why it feels a little bit faster right now versus last year where we didn't really play a whole lot of no huddle on offense. So I think you can either press the tempo in no huddle and try to get the play off like Chip Kelly's offense where you're running a play with 15 seconds left on the play clock. But I think our no huddle is going to be a little bit more slow it down, take what the defense gives us, but still calling a lot of the stuff at the line of scrimmage when we are in no huddle.
What's the new line coach like, and how has he changed things?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, Hal's a great offensive line coach. I'm excited to work with him. He's been in the NFL a really long time. His father coached here in the 90s. And, you know, as O-linemen, we do what we're told by the coach, and the O-line coach tells us what he's been told by the offensive coordinator and the head coach. So I think everything kind of gets dictated from top down. And so right now the stuff we're learning is the stuff that comes from Pep and from Hugh.
In terms of looking at the changes that are going to have to be made at each position where guys left, and what are your impressions about the guys who look like they're angling for a starting job right now?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think guys are doing a good job right now. I think obviously we have Cam that's kind of racing in the front for the position at center, and then Alvin Bailey's been taking most of the reps at right tackle. And I think they've been doing a good job. It's obviously early on, and there's really not a lot to be determined at this point. But they're right where they need to be if they want to win the job in the fall.
Joe, do you have another competition in you?
Ready or not, here it comes.
What do you think about RG3 so far? What he's seeing out there, and you know, when you see Cody coming in and Josh can handicap the spot a little bit?
There's a lot of guys out there that on our team that have a chance to be the starting quarterback, and all of them have been doing a really good job this spring. Rob's obviously been taking most of the reps with the number ones, but Josh has gotten some reps with the number ones and some of the other guys down the line. And with Robert, he's very intelligent. It's obviously very important to him. You see him here late at night during the week working on the plays, going through the script. So he's giving it everything he's got, and I think we're behind him 100%.
You sat down and kind of really gone over the direction of the team, and what is it about the direction that appeals to you? I mean, if there's ever a player that, you know, could ask respectfully to have a chance to win, it's you. What's appealing about what they're trying to do here now?
Well, me personally, I really like the offense that we're going to be running. I think I was always jealous of the guys that were in Cincinnati running Hugh Jackson's offense because it's a very offensive line friendly offense. A lot of quick throws, a lot of easy fade balls, a lot of different formations to spread the defense out, confuse them, get them into really vanilla looks. Some up-tempo stuff. Smash mouth football. He really wants to run the ball inside the tackles. Just the thing that appeals on offense is we're going to make the defense guard every blade of grass on the whole field because we're going to be throwing it from sideline to sideline. We're going to be running it inside. We're going to be putting tackles, guards, different formations all over the field. And I think that gives an offense a big advantage. And it makes life a lot easier on an offensive line because it's really difficult to just – sit back in your basic formations and drop the quarterback and throw the ball. Today's defenses are too advanced. They pay the pass rushers too much money to get after the quarterback, and you don't really have much of a chance as an offensive line, as an offense, to think that it's 1995 and you're just going to drop the quarterback back and prop him up in the pocket and throw the ball all day.
You know, last year we saw Cincinnati a couple times split out the tackles and guys way out. Have you had a chance to line up outside the numbers yet?
At this phase in the spring right now, we're just kind of putting everything that might possibly be in the playbook in right now. And so we've done everything that Hugh did in Cincinnati, whether it was a walkthrough or a practice. We've done everything that Pep has done in Indianapolis. I mean, our playbook's really vast. And I think once we come back in the training camp, we're going to pare it down a little bit. But right now, we've seen a lot of different formations and different looks that came from Hugh and that came from Pep that me personally, I've never run, and this is my seventh offense that I've played in.
Yeah, a couple more. When Alex and Mitch left the free agency, a lot of fans and people the media speculated that you might want to go too because you're so tight with those guys and cared so much about them, wanted them back. Did you ever feel that way?
Well, it's been a little bit of a tough transition losing Alex and Mitchell. I'd been here with Alex for, I think, like 7 years or somewhere about there. And so it's tough when you lose a really good friend like that, a guy that you've been through a lot of hard times with, and somebody who's probably one of my best friends. It was tough seeing him go. He's the best center in the NFL. I don't begrudge him for leaving, but it was tough when he left. It was tough seeing Mitch go, another good friend, a guy that I'd been around a long time, one of the top right tackles in football. So those are tough things, but in this business, that's just the way it goes, and you just got to roll with the punches, and you got to live with it. If the player and the organization can't come to an agreement, you got to move on and work with whatever the team gives you. I think kind of the whole offseason was not necessarily pins and needles, but I wouldn't have been surprised if I woke up any morning and the phone rang and said, hey, you got traded somewhere, just because of all the chatter that had gone on, all the number of veterans that were on this team that got released. Obviously, the young movement that is going on right now in Berea, it wouldn't have surprised me if I had been traded, but I'm happy that I didn't. So it's kind of a happy ending, but certainly with all the things that had happened since January, it wouldn't have been a shock.
Mitch,
In January, though, after last season ended, you were a little uncertain about whether you wanted to go through another change. At what point did you decide and that you would stick it out here and not ask for to be let go or be traded, and why did you make that decision?
Well, I think sometimes there's a little bit of a misconception about how much control players have actually about over their own careers. So even if I would have been really upset and decided that I didn't want to be here anymore, you don't really have that much say over it. But with that being said, I think by the time that I got a chance to meet Hugh and talk with Sashi and kind of see the direction that they want things headed and see the assistant coaches that were being hired, those were the things that said to me that I can really get excited about this, because like I mentioned, how jealous I was of the guys in Cincinnati being able to run Hugh Jackson's offense. I think he brings a tremendous offensive mindset, a tremendous offensive playbook, and I think he's a great leader. And you put those things on a team, and it's only a matter of time before that team turns into a winner. And since I got here, my goal was always to turn the Browns into a winner consistently, and I think Hugh's just the man for that.
From the standpoint, they made a splash signing with RG3. I would like to hear your take on RG3.
I think Rob's been great. He's, like I mentioned, been in the playbook till late at night, even in the off season, in the spring. I see him when I come into the building first thing in the morning. He's already here working on his progressions. He's here late at night going through the script for the next practice. So I think the only thing that I demand out of my players and that I want to see out of my teammates is that they're putting everything they have into it. You know, some guys just, they don't have the talent to do it, and that's okay. But as long as they're giving the effort, and from Robert, that's exactly what I've seen so far. He's been really impressive from the day that he walked in the building.
That's Browns Pro Bowl offensive lineman Joe Thomas, energized, as everybody we've heard from has been, by Hugh Jackson, the opportunity to play in this offense. We'll take a break when we come back. DeMario Davis, Terrell Pryor will be going to the podium as well today here on CBD.